I'll call this meeting of Higher Education Finance and Policy Division to order. Members and guests, please take your seats. I have an important announcement to make. So in a spirit of inclusivity, wow, we got a rowdy group today. I know we might have some teachers and professors in the room. You might have a strategy for us to get everyone listening. Okay, I'm going to start calling names pretty soon and calling you out. Just sit down. Okay, thank you. So in the spirit of inclusivity and to prevent misgendering of our testifiers, we're trying something a little bit different this year. Each committee member, staff member, and testifier has the option to take one of the pronouns, tense, from the committee card and placing it next to their names or in front of them when they testify at the table. And not all our members knew about this yet, so we'll do it next time, and if people choose to, they can. And this is completely optional, and please feel free to participate if you wish. Okay, thank you. We have a few new staff members today, and first I would like to introduce our researcher, Nathan Hopkins. Not introduce him, but let you know he is on paternity leave, which is exciting. And we're pleased to have Sean Williams here to fill in, who is a friend to higher ed and knows a lot about it. And our previous committee administrator, Sean Herring, if you don't know, he is on leave. Addie Miller will be filling in for the remainder of our 2020 session, and a lot of you already know her and know how good she is at her job, so welcome to your new position. And then finally, Eric Peterson will be replacing Addie as our committee legislative assistant. So welcome to the team, Eric. Okay, and then we also have, I'm going to defer right now to Representative Pryor, Vice Chair Pryor, because she has an announcement to make as well.
Well, I wanted to say hello to our page for this year, who hails from the wonderful city of Eden Prairie. and Alex, I'm sorry, I can't remember your last name right now.
Fox.
That's right, now I remember. We had that discussion. And then Alex, University of Minnesota. All right, so there are some supporters in the audience right now for that choice also. But thanks for being with us. Thanks, Alex.
Welcome to our committee, Alex. So I'd like to have a motion to approve the minutes for April 26th of 2019.
So moved.
Okay, so I didn't hear this. So thank you. Representative Runbeck moves the approval of the minutes for April, is it 26th? And any discussion? Okay, hearing none, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for April 26th are approved. So first up with us today is the University of Minnesota president, and she is here to present our 2020 priorities. Welcome to the committee, President Gable, and faculty and students. And so please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Bernardi. My name is Joan Gable. I'm members of the House Higher Education Committee. I'm delighted to be with you today. I'm also glad to express the university's appreciation to the committee staff for the good work that you do and the partnership. And I hope you enjoyed our little sweet treat with our apple crisp ice cream made by our very own ag school. So I hope you, I hope that gave you the after lunch pick me up.
Just a minute, President. I see people like nodding that they are shaking their heads. They have not.
Oh heavens!
So Alex,
can we, Alex?
Put you on that assignment.
My deepest and sincerest apologies.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Cleavorn.
I would like to know if this was prepared by food science students or?
Madam Chair, Representative Cleavorn, yes it was.
I always like to give a shout out to the food scientist at the University of Minnesota. Thank you.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Okay. So thank you for the treats today.
It's absolutely my pleasure, Madam Chair.
Okay.
So we would also like to recognize members of the university's Board of Regents that are here today, Regents Beeson, Davenport, and Hsu, and there are also several members of the university's executive team and faculty who are all honored to be with you today, and you'll hear from several students as well. So members of the committee, as you know, this is my first legislative session as president of the University of Minnesota, and I am eager and delighted to begin our work together. Since starting in July 2019, I've welcomed the opportunity to engage with you and your legislative colleagues here in St. Paul, visit and learn about your hometowns and neighbors, and explore how the university has played a role in your life and the lives of your constituents. The university's Board of Regents and I are working carefully and deliberately on many of the issues identified by you and your constituents as priorities for Minnesota, and we are making progress. For example, last week, the board was presented a report from an outside independent financial firm that we engaged to review administrative costs as compared to our higher education peers. This is a study we voluntarily embarked on in the interest of trust and transparency and as part of our commitment to be good fiscal stewards. While they did find opportunities for improvement, they also independently established that our workforce and expenses are not only in range as compared to our peers, but in many attributes, they're significantly better. We do know that there is more work to do on this issue, but we want you to know we take it very seriously. And we also know that it's a priority for you and your colleagues, so I'm eager to continue to engage with you on this topic as well as others in the weeks and months ahead, including our capital priorities for this legislative session, which I highlight for you here today with a simple message, which is that our university is committed to serving the state at top-notch levels, but we need top-notch facilities that match our ambitions and those of our students. Robust state support is the best way to make this possible. Our top priority is to restore existing facilities by undertaking renovation and improvement projects across the university. Asset preservation is amongst one of the most cost-effective uses of our bonding dollars. And by ensuring the longevity of our buildings, we can prevent costly teardown and replacement projects in the years ahead. However, state funding for capital projects has lagged behind. We have a massive maintenance backlog on our campuses across the system. The 10-year need at the University of Minnesota tops $4.8 billion. And as the following slide highlights, it's challenging for us to keep up, let alone get ahead. The backlog here, shown by the clear sections of each bar graph, shows a total increase of our backlog of $600 million in the last several years. And we know our need will continue to increase the longer our aging facilities go without funding, because half of our buildings are 50 years old or older. This includes our campuses in Metro and Greater Minnesota, our research and outreach centers, and our field stations. The state's investment is not only critical to reversing these trends, but it's a winning proposition. It's an investment in the future of our state, from our workforce-ready graduates to our life-changing and life-saving discovery and cures, to our $9 billion annual economic impact. And it's an investment in our facilities and infrastructure, which allows us to use operating dollars to enhance our student experience and to make our institutions more affordable and more accessible for all Minnesotans. By fulfilling our capital requests this session, the state can set us on a sustainable budgetary path into the future. So to this end, we're requesting support for the following projects. First, we respectfully request $200 million in HEPR funding, which will be utilized for projects across the system. Second, we request $29.2 million to renovate and modernize the Child Development Building on the Twin Cities campus, which is home to the number one nationally ranked developmental psychology program, and our own Samantha Gardo to my left, who's an undergraduate in the program from whom you will hear in just a few moments. We hold this top national ranking despite the current condition of the facilities and the lack of classroom space, but it's not sustainable, and it will become harder and harder for us to maintain our edge under the conditions we have today. Third, we have a $4.4 million request to modernize the A.B. Anderson Hall on the Duluth campus, and you'll hear from Aya Abusara in a few minutes to discuss that in more detail. The 36,000 square foot facility in Duluth provides critical teaching space for more than 4,500 students studying communications, philosophy, history, and art. Fourth, we have a $65.6 million request to create a 100,000 square foot undergraduate chemistry laboratory that will support more than 3,300 students and 18 active learning laboratories, providing space for collaboration, lab prep, and academic support. And you'll hear from Grace Gretz to describe her experiences in that building in just a few minutes. And lastly, but certainly not least, we request $18 million to design a new patient and participant-friendly clinical research facility on the Twin Cities campus, and you'll hear from Dr. Jacob Tolar about that momentarily. This project will improve access to advanced treatments and state-of-the-art care for patients and their families, and also provides additional support for the more than 1 million people that the university cares for annually. Members of the committee, in closing, our 2020 capital requests demonstrate the university's commitment to scholarship and discovery. They expand our learning opportunities for our students, our faculty's research capacity, and access to clinical care for all Minnesotans. An investment in our facilities is an investment in the tremendous impact of our people, and it will only serve to grow the university's outsized economic contribution to the state of Minnesota. We are extremely grateful for your support, and we look forward to working together to renew the university and our fine state, and I thank you. So at this time, Madam Chairwoman, I would like to defer to our student, Samantha Gardo.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee, Ms. Gardo.
You may proceed.
Thank you. Madam Chair Bernardi and members of the committee, my name is Samantha Gardo, and I'm an undergraduate at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, studying in the Institute of Child Development. I am delighted to be here today in support of the university's Child Development Replacement Building Project and to share with you my experiences at the Institute and my views about what undergraduates will gain in the proposed new building. I am also a McNair Scholar, and the McNair program is an intense preparatory program for low-income, first-generation, and underrepresented students that helps prepare us for graduate study. I'm the first person in my family to attend college, and my work at the Institute has been profoundly important to my success. I began working on research projects in the Institute as a freshman when I took research credits in an ICD lab. I have had the chance to work on several exciting research projects there. For example, as part of my McNair program, I have studied the impact of stress on a woman's pregnancy, as well as the role of nutrition on how a baby grows in utero through analysis of their food diaries for protein, carbs, and sugar. This allows us to better understand child development during pregnancy. Through this work, I have learned a great deal about how to delve deeply into unfamiliar topics, to grapple with the task of incorporating existing research findings into my own hypotheses, and to work as part of a small collaborative team. I've been exposed to the active, generative dialogue that the Institute provides, and I've gotten the chance to present my work at national and international meetings, which has allowed me to meet individuals who are at the forefront of my field. Because of the Institute's collaborative approach, I am now working with a professor who studies the impacts of parental substance use and depression on the developing child's brain and behavior. In my nearly 4 years at the Institute of Child Development, I have been able to work and study with world-renowned professors and have gained experiences that have fostered my desire to pursue a PhD and become a clinical child psychologist. The Institute truly has allowed me to grow as an individual and as a scholar, and has given me the opportunity to take what I learn in my classes and directly apply that to the work that I'm doing. Despite my exceptional experiences as an undergraduate in the Institute, I have never had the opportunity to take a class in the building, nor do I or my fellow undergraduates have a space to call our own within the building. Due to the lack of classrooms in the Institute of Child Development, all of our child development classes are spread across the campus and are not in the same buildings as our professors. If we were able to have a building that houses the majority of our classes and creates a collaborative space for undergraduates, the possibilities to connect with graduate students and professors would truly enhance our undergraduate experience. The Institute has supported me as a first-generation student to feel at home in higher education, and because of the opportunities it has afforded me, I will not only be the first person in my family to receive a bachelor's degree, but the first one in my family to earn a PhD. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
President Gable, do you want to introduce the next person or call them up? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum.
Father Salam, thank you for recognizing me in my Islamic greeting. Chairwoman Bernardi and members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity. My name is Aya Abusaria. I'm a senior at the University of Minnesota Duluth. And I double major philosophy and political science. So a little bit about me. I grew up in Northside, Rochester, Minnesota, and I come from a really tight-knit community. Many of us were close because we had a lot of things in common, such as being first-generation students who have immigrant parents or come from low-income housing or had to grow to be young leaders in the household because our parents were mainly absent due to working long hours. The idea of college was never really encouraged of us, not because we didn't have the potential, but because it was something that our parents never really expected of us. And so I relied on community members to guide my decision to pursue higher ed. So hopefully one day I can give back to the community. I was part of a college preparatory program called Upward Bound in high school. Students had the opportunity to tour colleges around Minnesota and learn useful skills and resources that would help ensure our success when we got to college. After touring UMD, I was absolutely certain. The town, the community, the environment was everything that I needed if I was going to grow as a young woman. And I can't explain it. It was something about that campus that just felt absolutely right. So I applied to only UMD. And I made a promise to God, and I said, Lord, if I don't get into UMD, I'm not going to college at all. And lo and behold, it is my second to last semester at UMD, finishing my bachelor's in pre-law. And after my bachelor's, I plan to go to law school in Chicago. Being a political science and philosophy major, the majority of my classes take place in AB Anderson Hall. And on several different occasions, classes had to be either moved or canceled, or students had to do research elsewhere because it's simply too hot or too humid to learn in this environment. And I remember walking in normal temperature hallways, and it just feels like normal temperature. And when you step into AB Anderson hallways, you feel the heat right away. It just hits you right in the face. It feels like one leg could feel like you're sitting in Minnesota and the other leg stepping into Florida. And so it's completely drastic temperatures. So that's why I can say with absolute confidence that AB Anderson needs critical updating, and it needs to be modernized. With updated mechanical systems, we'd be ensuring the safety, security, and accessibility for students and teachers who utilize this building. And we'd be investing in students by enhancing our experiences in the classroom. And by supporting all UMD students who take classes in AB Anderson Hall, we would be supporting the community, and it would be an investment back to Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I believe, is Grace Gretz up next on deck? Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and affiliation with the U.
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Grace Gretz. I am a senior undergraduate student and a teaching assistant for the General Chemistry Laboratory course at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus. It is a pleasure to be here in support of the university's chemistry undergraduate teaching facility bonding project. Future astronaut, dentist, large animal vet, engineer, business owner. These are just a few of the future careers of the students I currently teach. I myself wanted to open up a makeup company when I was a freshman walking into my first chemistry lab at the University of Minnesota. Every year, thousands of us walk in with many different dreams, yet all start out in the same lab. Because I was so excited for starting my future path through the chemistry lessons, I was so taken back by how old school the labs were. There was row after row of old wooden benches with poles scattered throughout the lab. Mm-hmm. Upon seeing this, I thought, this old room is supposed to set me up well for my future. At the time, I didn't realize how much this would inhibit my learning, as the benches made it hard to work in a group, constantly running from one side to the other, the poles made it difficult to see my teaching assistant, and the long, gigantic room itself made it noisy and hard to hear. For everyone in this room, to get a better idea of what I mean by noisy, one TA oversees about 28 students. There are usually four TAs per 3-hour lab, coming to about 110 students, all within one lab,
communicating with one another and trying to conduct chemistry experiments. It is hard to talk over one person. Imagine trying to talk over 110. This course is based upon guided inquiry, which allows students to determine their own methods to answer problems presented to them rather than being given a step-by-step procedure, which was something new to me, as well as many of the students that walk into this chemistry lab. This innovative teaching method is part of why many students choose to go to the University of Minnesota, myself included. The issue with this course was not with the material. In fact, it sets up students in all majors to effectively learn how to problem solve. But the issue was learning in a room that seemed to be designed for someone who was working alone rather than in a collaborative group setting. The limitations of the space required us and many of my current students to constantly go work outside of the lab and sit on the floor of the hallway. But that was at least better than not being able to hear your lab partners. As a student, I may have thought doing my coursework in a busy hallway was not the worst thing in the world. However, I have now realized as a TA that this was less than ideal, as I cannot see and help all of my students at once. As I said before, there is only one of me watching over 28 students. And because of how the benches are set up, I cannot always see and hear my students in the lab. And I certainly cannot interact with my students outside in the hallways that are trying to interpret their results and plan for their next experiment. The current lab setup is just not designed to teach the innovative and renowned lessons the chemistry department at the University of Minnesota has. As a student, I think I thought a lot of those issues, such as the inability to effectively work with my group due to the setup of the lab, or the loud noises, were taken just as they were because I did not know any better. As a TA, I have realized how much these issues limit my ability to teach and limit the ability of my students to learn. These students of mine, the future astronaut, dentist, large animal vet, engineer, and business owner, chose the University of Minnesota to get the best education possible to pursue their dream career. They deserve to have a building that will allow them to learn the renowned lessons the U promises them. They deserve the chance to see their dreams come to life. And it all starts with us setting them up for success in the right learning environment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I know some of our members have visited. How many of our members have visited the lab? I know, right? Anybody else? She described it very well, didn't she? Yes, very well. Thank you. Welcome, Dr. Tolar. It's nice to see you today.
Madam Chair, members, President Gable, my name is Jacob Tolar. I serve the university and the state as the Vice President of the University for Clinical Affairs, as the Dean of the Medical School, and my patients and Minnesotans as a bone marrow transplant physician. I am delighted that I can be here today and support the request for the clinical research facility. This is for the design of the facility and the land that the building would stand on. And what it is, it's more than the land. It's more than the building. It is the idea. It is the noble moral, almost, imperative of bringing the best of medicine to Minnesotans. It is the partnership that has started with you and with the legislature some years before that does make this possible. So when you have your loved ones, yourself, you know, people you represent, and I serve, that have terrific, life-changing disorders, sometimes fatal, sometimes disfiguring, sometimes humbling, you know, in many, many aspects, and you have a standard of care that doesn't help with it, then I refuse that standard of care. And the only way that how we can approach this is the same way we have separated magic from medicine some 150 years ago, and that is science. So the advance, you know, that this clinical research facility represents is the one when you bind the basic science and the basic understanding of the molecular and cellular pathology of the disease with the clinical care. You do not always bring this from zero to home run. Sometimes you change an acutely, tragically fatal disorder to a chronic one, some disorder that you can actually live with or your loved ones. Degenerations of the brain come to mind. Some cancers of the brain and abdomen come to mind. You know, that is the way you can do this. The only way to do this is, in fact, to bring the disorder back to the lab and change the practice of medicine by the knowledge that can only be gained from the lab. So now this is what you have done already. You have built, you have supported what's called biodiversity Discovery District. That's a chain of about seven research institutes that is devoted to stem cell biology, degeneration, microbiology, and so forth. That's where the knowledge comes from. Then this fall, we will open, with your support and with your leadership, the Health Science Education Building. That's where we train the next generations of practitioners, all sorts, pharmacists, nurses, clinicians, doctors, in a totally new way, and that is the interprofessional education. This is how we put the patient in the middle. So she's not anymore the one that goes from one office to another. She's the one that's in the middle, and the physicians, nurses, pharmacists, and everybody else comes to her. The third part of that magic triangle, the Biodiscovery District, the Health Sciences Education Building, is this clinical research facility. That is where the clinics and surgical center that we already have will partner with this clinical research facility. So you should ask, what is it, you know, in that facility that's different? What is different is that the research, not just from this phenomenal university and its medical school and the research enterprise, comes to the patients. It is the access point to the research from anywhere internationally. And that is phenomenal. We do this from the standpoint of what we call clinical trials. It means no experimentation. It means that you have access to the minds or brains of people that are physically, geographically, in time, very distant from here. And it's all done in service to the Minnesotans, to their health, and to their treatments. The other thing that you asked us some time ago is to restore the preeminence of the medical school. So we have moved three ranks in the NIH funding, the National Institute of Health funding, this year, three ranks last year. It's never been done before. This is very substantial, not because of the number alone, even though it feels really good to beat Wisconsin finally. I made the same joke a little while ago. But what it represents is the quality of the care, you know, that one gets, the ability to attract the best minds in the United States or elsewhere to serve Minnesotans. So this is what the clinical research facility represents. This is why it is a gesture and an action, an increase of humanity for this state and for all of us that are involved in that noble endeavor. So we are ready. With your support, with the leadership of the president, we will deliver. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. President Gable, did you want to proceed, or do you have any other testifiers today?
Madam Chair, we have no other testifiers. We would be delighted to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Okay. Do we have any questions by our committee members? Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr.
Tolar.
I was going to remember it.
Tolar.
Okay. So there's two facilities. One, we have a fair amount of detail. We know how many square feet in the chemistry building, how many laboratories, et cetera. Not much known about the clinical research facility, and when does that come? When do committees know about that? What's planned?
And do I call you Dean Tolar? Do I call you President Dean Tolar? Not President, but Dr. Dean Tolar? How do you go? What do you go by?
Jacob's fine.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Stinker. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Okay, go ahead.
Madam Chair. Representative, the funding that we are requesting for the clinical research facility is for design. That's why you don't have in front of you the details of the phase two. The design itself, I should clarify, involves not just, you know, how we're going to plan this, where things are, but also the purchase of the land on which the facility would stand.
Okay. Okay, I could just follow up. So there's a campus, there's an empty area of ground over at the U. Can you maybe describe
Madam
where
Chair,
that is?
Representative, yes. Okay. This is the beauty of this, because if you come from 94, you know, and you look, you have the river on the left-hand side, there's an open space, you know, and we've been able to, we are very close to being able to secure that land for what I think, you know, is will be a clinical campus, you know. So this is, the whole corridor will be devoted to education, clinical care, and research. Yes. Thank you for your question.
And thank you for your questions. And I do want to let members know, because this isn't a reminder, you might not already know this, but we will be having a hearing on the bonding proposals for our universities at another hearing, just to make sure you know about that. Oh. Representative Lehman.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I was pleased to be able to tour University of Minnesota, all the buildings, I think, that we're talking about today for the bonding request. So when your testifiers were talking about it, I was picturing this in my mind. I can remember being in each of these places, especially the Child Development Center. We spent more time there. My question is for you, President Gable, and it's a small question. I hopefully you can answer it. When I'm going through the list here of the individual, I think these are the HEPA requests.
Yeah.
I just don't know what is meant by, look at the Duluth campus, and I see it popping up in a few other places. What is meant by capital renewal?
Okay, President Gable.
Madam Chair, Representative, the capital renewal versus a strip down and rebuild. So that building will be refreshed,
okay,
as opposed to taken down.
Okay, got it. Thank you, President Gable. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I'm going to go to Representative Gomez and just want to make sure we're over our time if we want to be able to get to everyone equally. And so in fairness of our other testifiers, I would like to be focused. If we could save our bonding questions for our next hearing that we have, that would probably be our most efficient use of time. So go ahead, Representative Gomez.
So I can save it if you'd like.
Can you save it? Okay, yep. Thank you. Representative Quam, do you have a non-bonding question?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Go ahead.
President Gable, you had touched upon a study, and it was verbiage. Is it possible to share that data and information with the committee members so we can better understand? Because that does have some impact. And then Dr. Dean Tolar. I noticed that there is been averaging, I think, better than $25 million from the Office of Technology and Commercialization from patents and other discoveries that come out of the work at the U. Does some of that get aimed back into updating equipment? And, you know, I was just curious how that is reinvigorating, you know, your research.
Okay. So, President Gable, do you want to answer the first part?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, we can make the complete study available or a highlight executive summary, and we can discuss that after to determine the best way in which you would like to receive the information, but we would be delighted to share it.
I'm going to say Dean Dr. Tolar. I'm thinking that might be correct. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, thank you for playing with this. I think that Representative Quam, I think the second question may go to the President Gable as well, but I'll just say that there's no direct flow that goes from the Office of Commercialization direct to this building, but it does support the research at the University of Minnesota. And since we have a renewed center with the Vice President Kramer that oversees the research in this area, we are looking for the new ways of getting more revenue into the research enterprise.
Okay. Well, thank
you, Chair.
Well, thank you, members, for your questions and for the University of Minnesota for being here today. And welcome to your first committee, President Gable. We've been looking forward to you testifying before us. And thank you for the treats.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your time and attention.
Okay. And bless you, Representative Wolgemond. Okay. So, our next up is the Minnesota Private Colleges and Universities. They will share with us their 2020 priorities. And we have Paul Cirkvenek as well as President Paul Pribino. And we also have, I believe it's, and she can help me here, Aisha Abdullah.
Good.
welcome to our committee. And I am guessing that Mr. Cirkvenek is going to talk first.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Cirkvenek. I'm the president of the Minnesota Private College Council. Thank you, Madam Chair, for inviting us to testify today about our requests and priorities for the 2020 legislative session. I'm joined today by Paul Privino, the president of Augsburg University, and Aisha Abdullahi, a senior at Hamline University. I want to begin by thanking the members of the committee and the legislature for the investment the state makes in the Minnesota State Grant Program. The state grant program in Minnesota is a national model for providing need-based financial aid to undergraduate students. The state's investment in this program makes a tremendous difference for approximately 80,000 Minnesota students who receive state grants. For this legislative session, if the legislature advances a supplemental budget bill, we ask the committee to make the state grant program a funding priority. When the state has a budget surplus, investing in the state grant program makes sense because it allows increased resources to be focused on the college students with the greatest need for additional help in paying for college. State grants, as you know, serve both recent high school graduates and adult learners, whether enrolled part-time or full-time, attending two-year and four-year institutions, public and private institutions. Specifically, if there are additional resources available, we'd ask you to make an investment in the state grant program to reduce the student share element of the state grant formula. I just want to talk briefly about that because it so directly affects students. In the state grant formula, the student share is set at 50% of the total cost of attendance, which includes both tuition and living and miscellaneous expenses. Students contribute to the cost of their education mainly by working and by taking out student loans. But the expectation that students pay 50% of the total cost from working and borrowing is an unrealistic expectation. Students simply cannot pay that share from reasonable work hours and reasonable borrowing. When the student share expectation is unrealistic, students are forced to borrow more or work excessively or both. An analysis completed by the Office of Higher Education shows that low and middle income students can't afford to cover the student share at four-year colleges through reasonable work and maximum federal borrowing. For students at two-year colleges, it's not possible to complete a degree without significant borrowing. OE's analysis should suggest that the student share would need to be lowered from 50% to 36% to fully address these financial aid gaps. Reducing the student share would be a direct way to reduce the pressure to borrow and the need to work excessive hours or to enroll at less than full time. So if there are resources this session, we would ask the committee to make some incremental progress on the student share by reducing it from 50% to 48%. As you all know, our state is facing a workforce shortage. To build the workforce our state needs, Minnesota has established a state education attainment goal that 70% of Minnesotans aged 25 to 44 will have a post-secondary credential or degree by 2025. We won't be able to meet this goal without closing our race-based and income-based educational disparities. The state grant program is an essential tool for eliminating our educational disparities and meeting our state's attainment goals because it directs state resources to those students who face the biggest barriers to educational success. I'd like to finish my testimony by sharing just a few updated facts with you about the contributions private nonprofit colleges are making to reduce educational disparities in Minnesota. This fall, 30% of the new freshmen enrolled at our colleges are students of color. This compares to approximately 23% of Minnesota high school graduates who graduated in the spring of 19 who are students of color. Overall, 26% of our students currently enrolled are students of color. Many people assume that private colleges primarily serve students from higher income families. That's not true of MPCC institutions. In the last academic year, 27% of our students were Pell Grant recipients, meaning that generally they came from families with incomes below $45,000. That share is comparable to the share of Pell Grant students at Minnesota State two-year and four-year institutions and is a higher share than at the University of Minnesota. Finally, I want you to know that all institutions, including ours, have attainment gaps, but students of color and lower-income students are succeeding at our institutions. Our four-year graduation rate of 56% for students of color and 55% for Pell students exceeds the average graduation rates for these students at both public and private colleges nationally. Now, I share these data points with you only because I want you to know that when you invest in students at our college through the state grant program, they are succeeding. And the state grant is a critical part of their success at our colleges and at all colleges. Our colleges are dedicated to the success of these students and to eliminating Minnesota's educational disparities. As a state, this should be our top educational priority. Adequate funding for the grant program is an essential investment in student success that is needed at both public and private institutions to help eliminate disparities and meet attainment goals. That's why, if there are resources, we ask that you make an investment in the state grant program a funding priority. I want to now let you hear from Paul Pribino about this, the impact at Augsburg of state grants, and Aisha Abdullahi.
Welcome to the committee, President. Let's see if I get this right. Pribino?
Pribino. Pribino. Okay, yes, Pribino. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep, I should know that. Okay, sorry.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it is a pleasure to be back with you again. This is my 14th year as president of Augsburg, and it's been a wonderful opportunity to come here many times and to thank you quite deeply for the impact that the state grant program has on students who come to our private colleges and to our public colleges. It's a joy for me to be a part of a very rich and robust higher education community that includes the University of Minnesota, the Minnesota State, as well as our 17 private colleges that are part of the Minnesota Private College Council. I'm here today just to talk a little bit about the experience of one institution, Augsburg, and you have some PowerPoint slides in front of you, which I will just use as a reference point. It's our 150th anniversary at Augsburg, so we're celebrating our sesquicentennial. Try to say that quickly three times in a row. It's been a wonderful chance for us to think about where we've come from, but also where we're going. And in many ways, like many of our private colleges, we were founded by immigrants who came to this part of the country in the mid-19th century and founded colleges, in fact, to serve their communities. And now, 150 years later, we are serving a very broad swath of especially Minnesota students who come to us with very different life experiences, very different perhaps faith traditions, but in fact a deep commitment to education as in fact that path on the way to social mobility. And we're very proud of the fact that at Augsburg we have played a very important role in the location that we have in the middle of the Cedar Riverside neighborhood. As many of you know, one of the most diverse zip codes in the country, where we're surrounded by our immigrant neighbors. We're particularly proud that the class of 2023, which you see there at the bottom, in the bottom slide, was in fact our largest first-year class in Augsburg's history and also our most diverse. Our entering class this past fall were 65% students of color. So we are the most diverse four-year institution now in the state of Minnesota. And we're proud of that fact. That's what we've done because of our location and because of our commitments. And we find the state grant program then to be a central part of why we are able to make college accessible to the students who come to us, especially from the metropolitan area. I want to say just a quick word about the kinds of things that we're able to do in the community because of our students. So on the slide on the top of the second page, some of the programs that in fact you all know about, our EAST program, which is our East African Student Teacher Program, funded from the state, which is allowing us to educate the next generation of teachers of color, East African teachers, for our public schools. We are the home to the Minnesota Urban Debate League, which actually places debate programs at all of the metropolitan high schools and middle schools, providing a pathway for students to think about and gain the skills that they need to be successful in college and beyond. And then we also have a wonderful program called Design and Agency, which is actually a graphic design studio based on our campus, which is populated by students and by faculty members, but is actually providing services to the wider community. So many of the nonprofits in our neighborhood are being served by these students who are providing all the materials that they need to brand themselves and to tell their stories to the wider community. So very specific ways that we are very much engaging our students in the lives of their neighbors in very concrete ways, and that's made possible because they have access to an institution like Augsburg. Just some quick statistics about Augsburg. So we 42% of our students received the state grant, so 1,135 Augies in this past fall's entering class. The average grant at Augsburg is 5,139, and the average family income for those at Augsburg who received the state grant is just a bit over $45,000, which is half of the median income level for Minnesota families. So it's remarkable to think about how the state grant program is going directly to those students who need it most and whose aspirations to give back to their communities and to their families is actually supported by the state grant program. My last slide shows you two of our students that we're most proud. Many of you have actually met Brandon Williams, who's represented there on the right. Brandon has testified before this committee at least a couple of times. Brandon graduated this past spring as a political science pre-law major. He was offered about four jobs. He's actually working for R.T. Rybak at the Minneapolis Foundation as his first job, but he intends to go to law school. And I think he's a perfect example of someone who the state grant program gave him access to the place that was the best fit for him, gave him a chance to practice his leadership skills. He ultimately was the president of our student government and played a lot of different leadership roles, and now is giving back to his community. And I think Olivia House, who is the other student about to graduate this spring, is someone who is a graphic design major, a member of our soccer team, somebody who has made her focus point our commitment to equity and inclusion for on our campus and in the broader community. Again, students for whom the state grant program has been the basis of their ability to be at Augsburg. And now they don't see education as a right that they have. They see education as a privilege that gives them, in fact, that launching pad to go into the communities, into our community, in our communities here in Minnesota, to give back to their neighborhoods, to be part of our economy, and to be the kind of leaders that we know they can be. So I would just affirm Mr. Sekvenik's request to you that if in fact there is the opportunity to do a supplemental, I have to tell you that I have seen examples of students for whom $100, $200 is the difference between the ability for them to be in college or not. And so even a small investment in the state grant program over and above what you're already doing can have a huge impact on creating access to colleges. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And hello, welcome to our committee. Assalamu alaikum. And I will, I'm going to try. Aisha Abdullah.
Abdullahi.
Oh, I was close, but yeah. Sorry, I didn't get it.
No, totally okay. Fine.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members of the House, thank you for the opportunity to testify on this day. Again, my name is Aisha Abdullahi, and I am finishing my senior year at Hamline University in St. Paul. I am currently a double major in psychology and exercise science with a minor in nonprofit management. Attending Hamline University was the most affordable option to my family, as I come from a household of four siblings. My parents were never provided the opportunity to attain a college education, so they did everything in their power to make sure we received the best education to attend college. Today, two of my brothers attend the University of Minnesota Twin Cities and are also recipients of the state grant. We could not afford to attend college all at the same time without your investment in the state grant program. I am currently the chair of the Minnesota Association of Private College Students. The goal of MAPSIS is to strengthen each private institution by working together and sharing ideas that make each campus successful. MAPSIS is a strong advocate for the Minnesota State Grant Program as well. Over the summer, I was one of 20 students accepted into the University of Minnesota McNair Scholars Program and was able to complete a research project at the graduate level with the sociology department. The focus of my project was the barriers Muslim youth face when participating in organized sports. This project has allowed me to connect with professionals at both national and international conferences, building relations with PhD professors across the nation on trying to understand how we can improve the barriers that Muslim youth are facing here in Minnesota. I am also the president of the Ethiopian Eritrean Student Union, and our mission is to create and promote various cultural events and academic discussions revolving around topics of identity, diversity, justice, and freedom. This past month, my entire board and I were able to go back home to Ethiopia and complete a week-long collaborative project with the YMCA in Ethiopia. This semester, I will also be participating in the Capital Pathways program through the Citizens Leagues, interning with the Minnesota Private College Council. I plan to work after graduation before pursuing a graduate degree in sports and exercise sociology with an emphasis in public policy. Because of the Minnesota State Grant, I have been able to give back to my campus and community through research, leadership, and scholarship. This past year, 982 students at Hamline University received a state grant, which is approximately 44% of our undergraduate population. The average recipient was provided $5,477. This investment creates opportunities and possibilities for students who otherwise may not be able to attain a higher education. This grant provides financial support that is critical to their success. So thank you for supporting the state grant program. And I hope you continue to increase funding for future Minnesota students. Thank you for the investment in the program.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, do we have any questions? Okay, I see Representative Gomez, since you didn't get to ask your last question, let you start first.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for coming and offering this testimony. I just had a quick question for Mr. She had problems with Abdullahi Cirkvenek? Cirkvenek? Okay, my apologies. So I appreciated hearing some data about your students, and I wondered if you could speak to the debt load that your students are carrying upon graduation and how that compares to students in, at the U of M and the Minn State system, and sort of as we're thinking about, investment in kind of, unfortunately, in pretty limited ways. I know that a top concern of this committee and people in our community is just this unsustainable debt load. So if you have any data about that, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Cirkvenek.
Madam Chair and Representative Gomez, I'll be happy to provide you exact data about the debt loads at our students for the most recent year. I can tell you that the average, the median student debt of graduates from our institutions is not significantly different from the public institutions. It's a couple thousand dollars higher. And I would also tell you that our students have very low default rates in the 3 to 4% range. $28,000 is a lot of money. We would never say it isn't, but the value of the education they get from that degree is giving them economic opportunity that allows them to be able to pay the debt they incurred to get that degree. So I think that's an evidence that there's a good value proposition there for students. Nevertheless, the state grant program is essential to holding that debt down, and it targets the dollars at the students who don't have the family resources or the other opportunities, so that it's going to the students who have no options other than borrowing. So.
Okay, thank you. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, testifiers. Mine's more of a statement. I just want to, the other day we had One Minnesota, and it was over at the University of Minnesota. It was a great experience. Legislators and others were there on campus, and on my way out, I went by Augsburg, and I came back, and we had the chair had a committee kind of a huddle, and I was pretty excited about what I saw on your campus. And President, I just want to thank you for how you your art that you have on the buildings. It's probably part of your 150th anniversary celebration, but the faces of the founding folks that were probably predominantly white, and the great diversity of the students of your body. And I just thought it was really marvelous, and I don't know how many images there are, but it must be thousands of them. But, thank you.
I have a little President. 1,189 portraits that are on those. If you come along Riverside Avenue, it's a project called One Together, and it is exactly what you said. It's both historic figures whose portraits, and then there are students and faculty and staff who are currently members of the community. It took me about 4 days to find my picture, and somebody pointed up to me that out to me that it's above graffiti level. So.
Okay, thank you. Representative, we have two more questions. Representative Cleborn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to thank you also for coming today. I especially like hearing from the students. It's always great to hear the student voice in the room. When we talk about debt load for students, the private colleges receive their state grant allocation based at the University of Minnesota level. Is that correct? What I would like to see, so that we're comparing apples to apples and not apples to oranges, is I would like to know how your debt load is compared to the University of Minnesota system, but then I would also like to see how your debt load is compared to the state four-year institutions, because then I feel like the comparison would be a little more accurate for us as we evaluate going forward. That's the sum total of my question. If you could provide that for us, I would appreciate it.
Mr. Yes, Cervenic.
Madam Chair and Representative Clevarn will be happy to do that.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
And Representative Lehman, did you have a question?
No. Oh. Okay, so Representative Quam, your final question for today, for this hearing part.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And during your discussion about, I'm hearing a lot about debt load. You had mentioned, value and earning capability to make up. If you've got data and information on the different degree mixes, placement, and salaries, so we can understand, because I think that might be some of the issues for some of the students take things that maybe are not in demand or don't have the capability of paying back. So that, I'd like to understand your mix versus some of the other mixes for what you're providing. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we can provide information on the number of degrees that are produced by our colleges in various fields, and the early earnings of graduates after, I think now there's data out about 5 years, and of course it's important when you understand the economic return to the investment in higher education that you look at it over a lifetime. There's been a really good study done by the Georgetown Center for Workforce and Education that shows documents, again, data I think you've all heard, that over a lifetime there's a nearly $1 million return on the investment in a four-year college degree. And surprisingly, over a 40-year time horizon, they say that the greatest return inures to degrees in the liberal arts. So, but we'll be glad to provide that information to you.
Very interesting. Thank you, Mr. Cervenic. Okay, well, thank you for your testimony today. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I want to welcome Minnesota State Colleges and Universities to the testifiers table. And they, too, will be sharing their 2020 priorities. And welcome to the committee, Chancellor Malhotra, and we also have Associate Vice Chancellor of Facilities, Brian Yolitz. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Bernardi. Chair Bernardi, members of the committee, thank you for your time today. I'm Devendra Malhotra, and I have the distinct privilege of serving as the Chancellor of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'm joined today by some distinguished guests who are in the audience. First, I would like to recognize Jay Coles, the chair of our Board of Trustees. Then I would like to recognize somebody very familiar name in these chambers, Vice Chair of our Board of Trustees, Roger Moe, not a stranger to these chambers. And then
He waved.
Yeah, Vice Chair Moe is back there, and he has the distinction of serving as the longest-standing majority leader in Minnesota Senate. So thank you for being here, Vice Chair Moe, and thank you, Trustee Sundin, Louis Sundin, for being here too. And then I don't leave home without a lot of people around me. So we have also many of our presidents in the audience, and I would like to recognize their leadership by acknowledging them and with in, with your indulgence, Chair Bernardi, I would ask them to stand so that members can put names and faces together. First, I would like to introduce Angelia Milander, president of Century College, Patricia Rogers, president of Lake Superior College, Richard Davenport, president of Minnesota State University, Mankato, Joe Mulford, president of Pine Technical and Community College, and Scott Olson, president of Winona State University. President Milander and President Olson would also testify. I would like to begin by expressing our deep appreciation for your past support. Please know that the work you do makes a difference at Minnesota State's 54 campuses across this great state of Minnesota. I would like to say a few words about the Board of Trustees' capital budget and then the supplemental budget requests, which are before you today, and then turn the conversation over to my colleagues. In your packets, you have two documents. One is our bonding book, and the other is our supplemental budget request, which, Madam Chair, is very much aligned with the bill that passed the Minnesota House last session. In a few minutes, Brian Yolitz, our facilities guru, will provide a high-level overview on Minnesota State's capital budget request. Because of the legislature and the governor's work, we have been able to complete some remarkable transformational infrastructure projects in communities across Minnesota that will benefit teaching and learning for decades to come. We were able to celebrate grand openings of buildings in several communities this past year, including Hibbing, St. Cloud, Rochester, Albert Lee, and the Educational Village in Winona. Several of you joined us for these important community events, and I trust that you saw firsthand how your efforts can make a positive impact on our students' experience. Steve Ernst, our budget director, will walk you through one-page document we provided that explains our supplemental budget request. And then we would like to provide two important updates for the committee members. But first, I want to thank Representative Wolgamott and Chair Bernardi for introducing the board's supplemental budget request bill. I understand the bill will be heard in committee tomorrow, and we look forward to that discussion. The first update and part of our supplemental budget request will be from Winona State University President Scott Olson. He will highlight the ongoing work on our technology upgrade we refer to as Next Gen. For our system of colleges and universities, this perhaps is our most significant strategic investment since the system was created in the mid-90s. The final update will be from Century College President Angelia Milander, who will share with you the success of the Argosy students who you heard from last session. The work you did made a difference in their life's journey. I had the opportunity to attend the Century College graduation of the 35 dental hygiene students, along with Vice Chair Pryor, Commissioner Olson, and the family and friends of the graduates. The leadership of President Milander and interim Inver Hills Community College and Dakota County Technical College President Michael Berendt in this regard is greatly appreciated. Madam Chair, again, I would like to thank you for all the work of this committee and your staff. With your permission and indulgence, I would now like to turn it over to Brian Yolitz to give you to outline for you our capital bonding request. Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Yolitz.
Good afternoon, Chair Bernardi and committee. I am Brian Yolitz, and I serve the Colleges and Universities of Minnesota State as Vice Chancellor for Facilities, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities, Facilities Guru, I understand. Chancellor Malta asks that I provide a brief overview of Minnesota State's $271.2 million capital bonding request for this session. Your package includes a copy of the 2020 bonding book entitled Building Connections and Connecting Opportunities to serve as your ready reference for this request. After providing some facts and insights on the Minnesota State system, our program, and the students we serve, the bonding book provides context to the capital needs of our colleges and universities. If you turn to pages 6 and 7, you'll find a prioritized list of Minnesota State's 2020 request. On top of that, as number one priority, is $150 million for asset preservation, or HEPR, to address the most pressing stewardship needs of our colleges and universities. Pages 8 and 9 provide an overview of our HEPR program, and pages 10 through 13 outline campus priorities addressed within this portion of our request. The following pages highlight in priority order individual college and university projects. On pages 14 and 15, you'll see the top four priorities. Together, these received $14.5 million in the 2018 bonding bill for initial design and phase one renovation work. All are ready for 2020 funding to move into the final phases of construction. Priorities 6 through 9 are on pages 16 through 17. They would design future renovations at St. Paul College, design the renovation of existing facilities at Minneapolis Community and Technical College, Vermilion Community College in Ely, and the Brainerd campus of Central Lakes College. These, along with priority 10 on the next page, the renovation of East Grand Forks campus at Northland Community and Technical College, were on the board's 2018 request, had early support from this chamber early on in the session, but did not make it into the final bonding bill. New priority projects start at priority number 11 and would design and do initial renovation work at MSU Mankato to replace the now functionally obsolete Armstrong Hall with a smaller, more efficient building in the future. Design a net zero replacement for Gildemeister and Watkins Halls at Winona State University, and design space to bring Lake Superior College's welding and manufacturing programs on campus from leased spaces in Duluth. On pages 20 and 21, funding would design the community partnership endeavor between at North Hennepin Community College, design and renovate space at Metropolitan State University's old main building for their cybersecurity program, and finally design spaces for Pine Technical and Community College for their trades programs. Chair Bernardi and committee, your colleagues in the Capital Investment Committee, in fact, a couple of familiar faces in the crowd right here, traveled over 3,000 miles last fall, making nearly 150 stops around the state of Minnesota. 19 were at Minnesota State campuses, where they saw firsthand the facility issues and priorities we presented. They have expressed strong support for the request. We thank you and their time and attention last fall and this afternoon, as well as your past support of our needs within Minnesota State. Subject to any questions, I'll turn to Steve Ernest, our System Director for Financial Planning and Analysis. Thank you.
Okay, well, call up Mr. Ernest to the Representative Runbeck. Do you have a question?
Oh, wait.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Ernest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Steve Ernest, System Director for Financial Planning and Analysis at Minnesota State. In front of you, you should have a sheet that looks like this, with a large pie chart on it. I'll briefly walk through this information for you. First, as a reminder, Minnesota State's funding comes primarily from two sources, state appropriation and tuition. MS 135A.01 states the intention of the legislature to provide at least 67% of the combined revenue from tuition appropriation, and last year, with your help, we're estimating we're now at about 50% tuition and 50% appropriation, up from 49% in 2019. Minnesota State Board of Trustees' request for the 2020-2021 biennium included $149 million for tuition relief and campus support, and $18.5 million per year for replacing our integrated statewide record system. The Next Generation Record System, NextGen, will seamlessly process student academic, financial, and human resources records for nearly 400,000 students, faculty, and staff across the 54 campuses and as a core budget need for the system. And you see those numbers summarized at the top of the page to $167.5 million. Minnesota State budgets to a long-term 3% cost growth model using round numbers and remembering that the system's funding was about 49% coming from the state appropriation and 51% from tuition. The 2020-21 biennial request represented a little over a 6% increase in the state appropriation side in order to keep the tuition side of our funding at a 0% growth with the board's commitment to not increase undergraduate tuition rates. As you can see in the revenue section just below on this sheet, the legislature was able to fund about half of that request, less than half of that request, with $64.5 million in campus support and $4 million per year in NextGen funding. With this level of funding, state funding, all of our colleges and universities requested and received approval from the board to increase undergraduate tuition by 3%. The dollars you see on the sheet associated with that 3% are $44.8 million, represent the revenue from both years of the biennium. As noted in the margin, each percentage brings in about $7.7 million, more like a $7.5 million. So that's three percentages times the $7.5 million times 2 years. That's the $44.8 million you see there for the biennium. So the total request for these two core areas was $167.5 million for the biennium, and the total unmet need left for fiscal 21 now is $54.2 million, which is the request. I should note that part of the reason that it was so important for the colleges and universities to raise tuition in fiscal 20 was the lower funding for the NextGen work, meaning they did need to budget more in contributions to the NextGen project than they would have had to have done if the project had been fully funded. And since that money has been collected centrally for fiscal 20, we did not include the fiscal 20 NextGen funding gap in the request, just the ongoing annual amount. So to summarize, what the Board of Trustees is putting in front of you with their request is to hold to that long-term 3% growth horizon. With the funding at the $54.2 million level, the board would hold undergraduate tuition flat. Just to add a little more to the long-term planning nature of this request, it is not constructed in response to costs that are in some cases rising at rates higher than 3%, such as some personnel costs, or recent decreases in enrollment. These factors are real challenges that each college and university sometimes has to face by making cuts in order to manage its individual situation, and remember that all tuition is kept locally at the individual institutions. We realize this is not a budget year, but wanted to put this information in front of you again so that no opportunity would be missed to support this system that is such an important contributor to the life and economy of the state. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Representative Nornes, do you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair. Just a short one. Looking at the next gen item, I'm just trying to remember how close are we to the cost that we're getting to complete that project, is that correct? And how close are we to that goal?
Mr. Ernest.
Madam Chair, the request for $18.5 million per year is to make progress towards the core project amount, which is $150 million. This funding is on the revenue side, and the spending will be slightly different. We don't even have the project fully scoped yet as far as having a vendor in place. Okay. So we're trying to make as much progress towards that as we can.
Chancellor Malhotra, do you have a comment as well?
Chair Bernardi, Representative Nornes. As my colleague pointed out, $150 million is an estimate. We are right now in the midst of, we sent out a request for proposals. We are right now in the midst of a process by which we will select a vendor. And so the overall size and scope of the project and the cost would be then finalized. And that will then enable us to see over how many years we would have to defray this cost if we continue to charge our colleges and universities on the average $12.5 million a year.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to do my question after because I really do want to get We have one more. One more, and then we'll move on to President Melinder. Representative Runbeck.
Madam Chair, I think I'll direct this to you. I mean, it seems like we should have, at least as we are hearing all of the presentations and learning about the needs, some data on enrollment. And I'm aware that there has been declines. I don't know if that's system-wide. Obviously, enrollments go up and down depending on the economy, et cetera. But I think it would be very useful to all of us to just have that in mind, and perhaps looking back to 2015 and then comparing to 2019. It seems like that ought to be something that factors into the requests that are being made of us.
Chancellor Malhotra, is that something that you have readily available as enrollment for us to see?
Chair Bernardi, Representative, we will definitely make that information available to you. That's not a problem at all. But I do want to underscore one thing which is related to our budget requests, that as our enrollments change and as the size of our operations alters, our colleges and universities make internal adjustments. For example, if the tuition revenues decline, then we make internal adjustments in order to make sure that we are able to balance our budgets. And so I want to underscore that in our approach for our legislative requests, we are not asking you to fund the decline in tuition. We do that internally. And we can provide that information, too, as to how much reallocation and budget cuts occur every year.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Lean, before we move on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ernst, did I hear you correctly that the tuition increases you imposed this year were for the next gen work?
Mr. Ernest.
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, no, the tuition is part of the whole funding, and the colleges and universities do contribute towards the next gen funding out of that so big pot that the tuition goes into, but not directly tied to the project.
Thank you. Okay, President Melinder, we are excited. I think you're next on. No, we have President Olson. We're excited to hear you too, but the butt part.
I'm excited to hear all my presidents, Chair Bernardi.
Right, yeah, we really enjoyed our visit to your campus when we had our mini session in Winona. Thank you for your hospitality.
Well, I'm Scott Olson. I'm the president of Winona State. Chair Bernardi, thanks for saying that, members of the committee. I'll tell you that they're still talking about that mini session down in Winona, and forget about Winona Ryder and her Super Bowl commercial. The true A-list celebrities that came down to Winona are sitting right here, and you got 4-star reviews, even though some Winonans are kvetching about that Super Bowl ad. So thank you for coming down, and you're welcome anytime. I'm here to give you an update about NextGen. I was here last year to talk a little bit about it. I just want you to think about this really as a campus project. It's really easy to think about it as a system project, but really this is a project that's about what the campuses and especially students need. This is going to be disruptive to our system in really positive ways. It allows for real-time analytics so that we know what's actually going on with our students, what their needs are, what the classes they need, what their demands are. And as I think you will remember, we're near the end of life for the 30-year ISRS system we have been using, which was written in COBOL, which you can't find programmers to program COBOL anymore. And it served its purpose, but it's coming to the end of its life, and so next gen is where we're going next. 4 vendors made really elaborate presentations to a huge team of folks that analyzed them within our system, representing finance, representing HR, representing students, and representing IT. And this will mean a lot to students. It's going to mean a seamless experience for them. It's going to mean a digitally personalized experience for every student, systems that are integrated, student ability to ask a what-if question. If I'm a welding major but I want to become pre-med, or I'm pre-med and I want to shift to welding, what classes do I need? How does that change my course? World-class advising will be enabled. by this, and it helps our students find the most efficient path to graduation, which means less time, which means less cost. So those are huge things about it. The board's oversight of this project has been unprecedented. They've been very involved the whole way along, and I feel great about the process that we used to try to determine which of the different vendors are the right ones to negotiate with. So we're currently in that negotiation phase, and then that'll lead to a procurement process after that that'll again be supervised by our board. So that's just my quick update on NextGen. We could really use your support on this because it is expensive to campuses to do this kind of huge wholesale change.
Okay. Thank you for that update. Appreciate that.
In light of time, I'm going to go right ahead, if that's okay, and introduce my colleague, unless you've got a question.
We do have a question.
You do have a question.
We'll take one question. Because we have
Representative Quam.
That's
okay.
What we have on the list. Representative Quam.
Thank you, President Olson. Noticing the supplemental budget request and that One North State and RCTC between them are just a little bit under 4.5. Is any of that for the healthcare simulation facility that's been discussed?
President Olson.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. Thank you, Representative Quam. So Representative Quam's referring to an idea that the Grauk group in Rochester is talking about, which is for a shared sim space that would probably be shared by UMR, by RCTC, by Winona State. And no, there's nothing in any of the capital request or in the supplemental budget that refers to that.
Thank you.
So it's my pleasure to introduce my colleague, President Angelia Millender, who's going to talk about what the Century College faculty and staff are doing for Argosy students, which is pretty great.
Thank you. Welcome back to our committee, President Millender.
Thank you, Chair and members. The last time I was here, it was a different scenario. But what was good about that scenario, even though it was not very pleasant being in the room, hearing the stories of the devastation of the closing of Argosy University. Today, we get to celebrate and tell you some great news. When we left here last year, I was called to urgency by your committee and held to that standard by the chair and Member Edelson, who had my cell phone number and made me conscious of the fact that my work was called to order and I needed to deliver. Not that I wouldn't have done it anyway, but I think that catching up and making sure that we were on point was very important. The Argosy students, the tragedy of it was is that the dental hygienist students needed one class. They had attended that university for many years and needed one clinical class. It was called Clinical 5 in order to complete their program. And we needed to remove some barriers with our accreditors in terms to admit to the admit senior class or advanced standing students into our program that is first in the program type admissions requirements. We made those adjustments, got approval from our accreditors at the end of May, and started Clinical 5 for the 35 Argosy students on June 3rd. We call them the Argosy 35. That's their nickname. And what we also did for these students is that when I left this room and I heard their stories, I went to my foundation chair and my executive director and said to them that these students had already paid enough. They can pay no more. We did not charge any tuition or fees to these students. The foundation board provided scholarships for these students to cover their cost. The only thing they did have to pay, since the money goes to an outside service, is they did have to pay for their clinical, not their licensure exams with the state. They did have to pay that cost, but they paid no tuition to come to school. And the reason why that is important for you to know is that the course was only 3 credits. Students, unless they are high need Pell or and they can't get any more student loans, they didn't need any more, they can't get loans for 3 credits. They can only get loans for 6 credits. and we weren't going to give them another class they needed just so that they could qualify for debt. So we waived the tuition, and it was supported by our foundation. The next thing we did, while the students were in rotation and we knew that they were going to finish their clinicals that were supported by community dental, they stepped up in our community and offered those clinicals to all 35 of those students at their various locations. Those students did not have to go anywhere else other than community dental, so they need a shout out as well in this community. The other thing that Century did is we hired their faculty. We added more cost to deliver this education for the students, because these students learn in cohorts. They know each other. They're almost a family. So the Argosy 35 were a family. They had traveled to take all of their courses together at Argosy. And we thought it was important that we hired the faculty that they had been engaged in with that to increase their ability to succeed in their clinical rotations. They would not have known the Century faculty. Not that we wouldn't have done a good job, but we felt that their success point would be greater if they had the faculty that they had taken most of their courses with. So we did that as well. We also knew when they were going to complete that they would need a graduation and a commencement celebration so that they could share it with their families, and because they wouldn't have had that at Argosy, so they had it at Century. So on August 14th, we had a special graduation for them. We had already graduated all of our other Century College students at the second week in May. So we had a special ceremony, and as the chancellor said, he was there, and others were there. The commissioner, I believe that you were there. And we experienced, it was an awakening almost, being in the room with those families who turned sorrow into joy. And those students achieved their success. I am also happy to report, I didn't know I was speaking until last week, so I reached out to the, had my team reach out to the Argosy 35 and find out for you how many of them are working in field that they reported. Now, we still need to hear from 15, and they will get back to us, but 20 did respond, and they are working in field. So I think it's a complete circle of the advocacy and the work of so many, not just Century, in helping the Argosy 35. But I also want to respect my other colleague, President Burnt at DCTC, Dakota Technical College, who also worked with some of the veterinarian tech students who were here talking to you about completing their program. And what some of those students decided to start all over and take their full program at DCTC. And then the others who needed to get through and graduate who did, DCTC created special advising sessions and special courses over the summer to help those students to complete who were closer to the end of their program. The Minnesota State College and University System also helped many of the other students who had credits or wanted to start all over in our programs, that helped them as well in general studies and liberal arts classes so that they could complete their degree programs. I can answer any questions for you now, Chair and members, relative to this matter.
Okay, so I want to let members know we're going to have another hearing on how to prevent Argosy from happening in the future. So if we could wait till then to answer questions, will you be back? We'd like to invite you back for that. I know you're a busy president, but it would be wonderful to have you back at that time if that works out.
That would, okay. I will make it work out on my schedule.
Okay. We'll take one question, and that'll be that's what we have on the list, Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So also, Representative Daniels was at the graduation ceremony, too, and really appreciated his presence. And it was, there was cake, so it was really great. I know from being there how much the students appreciated your leadership, and that when you gave that speech, you know, that was probably the best graduation ceremony I've ever been to. And I've had some of my own, but that was really spectacular. So thank you for your leadership.
Thank you so much. And thank you for coming as well. I apologize for missing your presence in my speech. I saw you there.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for being here today. Chancellor Malhotra, do you have anything that you would like to wrap up with?
Chair Bernardi, members of the committee, thank you for the time. And we are here. If we can provide any other information as you wrestle with the important questions of the day, we'll be more than glad to be of any assistance. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. And I would like the meeting is adjourned.